Welcome back to the Blessed Hunt podcast. And I'm sitting with my uncle, Zach. Welcome.
Thank you.
So we just got done running out in the cold.
Yep.
A little suffering before we sat down to record.
It was 32 degrees.
Exactly.
So it wasn't too bad.
No, it was right at the freezing. It's warmed up since, it's what, -4, 2-3 days ago?
2 days ago, yeah.
Yeah, negatives. No, it's not so bad. So just for the listeners, you know, how old are you? How long have you been hunting?
Yeah.
Bow hunter, gun hunter, what's that look like?
Yeah, I'm 38. Started hunting, got a crash course from your dad. The night before gun season, you were there.
Yeah.
And you two were explaining to me how to hunt a deer with a gun. I was 27 years old.
Holy,
at the time.
So 11 years ago, so I would have been 26 right now. I'm 15.
Yeah.
Telling you.
Explain to me.
In all of my knowledge that I had.
And I had none. So I was just like, okay.
This kid knows what he's talking about.
We're going to go out there and see what happens.
Dude, that is so funny. So you were shooting the...
single shot 12 gauge. Your grandpa's gun.
Yeah.
Which,
it's like a rite of passage. So
yep.
Just so I can paint a picture for everybody else. I believe it's a H&R single shot, like classic.
Yeah. Yep.
Everybody had one, probably got it from like a Sears catalog or something. I don't know. It's my grandpa's. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it kicks like a mule.
Yeah. Like might have traded a mule for it.
Dude, one time I watched Dad sight that gun in, and he just bared down everything he had to shoot it, and he put it on his trailer, and it had to have came up off the edge of that trailer like 3 feet. I mean, it almost jumped out of his hands.
Yeah, it did kick. Accuracy, you're good within about 30 yards.
Yeah, typical slug.
You're not going... Nowadays, I shoot my bow much better than I ever could have shot that gun.
I don't even think it's not rifled. Like, it's like a smooth
barrel. It was smooth bore. Yeah. Smooth. And that was my first season. In my first season, I did get a doe.
Yes.
In the very first sit, a buck walked in at first light. Your dad was facing me, had no idea it was there, was turning around,
dude,
wondering what I'm like looking at, starting to aim at. And he scares it off.
Classic.
Yep.
Did he like...
It might have winded us. I had...
You don't know? Yeah, you have no...
I didn't know anything about deer hunting. Yeah. All of a sudden, there's a buck, and I'm like, oh, this is pretty easy. And so...
Yeah, you just sit down, and deer walks out, and kabang. Just like everybody, you know, everybody thinks, oh, man, that's so cool. So that was first season, and then... So you kill the doe, and like...
Yeah.
When you shot that first deer, what was the thought... In the moment, and then what was the thought after?
Oh, man, I haven't thought about that deer in a while. That was similar to things I've probably accomplished in sports.
Yeah.
Like, specifically baseball.
Yeah.
Probably, like, holy smokes, that felt good.
I just struck this dude out in the bottom of the ninth to send us to the...
Whatever.
Whatever championship.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, that kind of feeling, but also kind of like, did I put a good shot on it? Did I kill it? That kind of stuff. But then it didn't go very far. And
the slugs do, they do some damage.
Yeah. But I do remember that specifically, like you were there.
Yeah.
Seth was pretty little.
Yeah.
And your brother and obviously your dad. But I do remember that was really cool, especially praying.
Yeah, man.
Over the deer was really cool.
That's my favorite. That is my favorite part of any kill.
Yeah. So that was kind of it for me, and then I became obsessed.
Did you feel remorse?
No. No. It was very much appreciation of, wow, this is where... real food comes from.
Yeah.
Not
this. Right. You didn't go buy it in a package from a store. Like, this is straight from the source out of the earth. Like, and I'm the one that just took this animal's life, but it gave its life. Now it's going to give me life by feeding me, feeding my family. Like, oh, that's so cool, man. So kill the doe. You're hooked.
I'm hooked.
All the way in.
It's now let's figure out how to go bow hunting.
So you hunted, I can't remember. So what, so that was your first season, gun season. Uh-huh. And then did you pick a bow up quickly after that? Like in the off season?
Yeah, in the off season. A friend of mine who was like a, his name's Jay Houston. He's like an old school elk guy. Like he's written books on it. You can, you can look him up.
Yeah.
He was a guy I knew from work and he sold me a bow. It was like a 2006 PSE. And this was
nice. Gosh,
what year would this have been?
We're in 2025 right now, 11 years ago. So 2011 or well, that's not good math. 2014.
Yeah. Yeah. It was 2014. 2014 was my first bow hunting season. So, you know, bought an older bow. It was 60 pounds FMJs.
Nice.
And that thing was like, I shot good.
Yeah.
And so I started learning how to shoot. For me, whenever I learn anything new, if I actually care about it, especially I care about a lot, I go deep dive.
Yeah.
And so it was a combination of reaching out to people who are good deer hunters and like just asking them questions,
asking questions. Did you pick up any mentors in that moment or was it? Okay.
Cool. Yeah. My buddy Kurt, still a mentor to this day, 'cause he kills like 160s every year.
They're behind every tree, so it can't be that hard, you know?
My buddy Kurt, I talked to him much. Your older brother, Mitch.
Yeah.
Like, you know, I don't talk to Mitch about whitetail strategy as much anymore because he's out west, but...
Probably was helping with some bow questions.
Yeah, all the above.
Things like that.
Well, even, I mean, he was a good whitetail hunter.
Yeah, absolutely.
When he lived around here, he killed big deer.
And absolutely.
He was a great hunter.
In high school. He was in high school. Yeah. He was killing really good deer. Yeah, so, him and my other uncle were running around killing some really, really nice deer kind of almost before it was cool, honestly. Yeah. So that's cool. Okay, so you had...
And then eventually I met my buddy Cody Smith. I can't remember when we met, but within a year or two.
Yeah.
And my buddy Cody was the one who got me into like, hey, follow John Dudley for here's how you shoot a bow. Listen to Wired to Hunt.
Yeah.
You know, here's all this like world of podcast and... all this kind of stuff.
Here's all the info. Take with it what you will, but here it is.
Yeah. Plus, like, I would text them. I'm still to this day. We text strategy
all the time.
All the time.
That's awesome.
And so those. I'd say, you know, Cody and Kurt, I still talk to a lot.
Yeah.
And
I think it's so important, man. I mean, I had some amazing mentors. I don't know if I would be half. You know, you're a mentor to me now.
Yeah.
And you are, you know, if you hang out with five great bow hunters, you're probably going to be the sixth one, right? You got to surround yourself with people and like, that is.
Yeah. Like literally anything in your life. I mean, cause
yeah, absolutely, man. And I think especially with you, like, I think it's so interesting a lot that you are not the stereotypical bow hunter story. Most folks are akin to me. Like we were just talking before we got on the air, we are talking about at age five, I pick a bow up and like grow up in hunting. My grandpa, everybody's hunting. Like you are around bow hunters. You're in an area of a lot of hunters, but you weren't hunting until you're 27.
Yeah. 28's my first bow season.
You're 28 bow hunting, 27. The first time you're hunting for big game. I mean, that to me is so interesting. And do you feel that you had, as some folks will say, like you have hunting in your blood, right? Like I knew you were an avid fisherman before that, obviously, but like, did you feel a draw to it prior to, you know, when you were 27 and you shot one?
Yeah. I was Mitch, your brother specifically would tell me, oh, you like fly fishing? He's like, you would love bow hunting. I was like, that's man, so cool. I agree.
Yeah.
But it's not, it's pretty expensive getting into it.
Of course.
And that was always my...
Yeah. Yeah. No,
there's a lot of hobbies that people tell me I would love, and I'm like, man, I agree.
Yeah.
But I'm not just going to drop a ton of money on something right away.
Yeah. So you're like, I get what you're saying. I can be similar. You're like, I want to be able to put everything I have into it. So maybe this time in my life wasn't right. But once it was, it seemed like you dove all the way in completely. Shoot your first doe, and then you're like, I need to bow hunt.
Yeah.
Instantly after. So that fall, what was the first bow kill like? And how long did it take you to get
there? Yeah, that was interesting, because prior to my first bow kill, I mostly had success during gun season.
Yeah, yeah. So you're still doing both?
Yes. And I was making a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
But I wasn't, fortunately, I wasn't like shooting a bunch. I just wasn't getting the opportunities. And okay. I had picked up a couple permission pieces, mm-hmm. and I would, you know, put stands in there. I would, you know, talk to buddies like, how do I do this? Where should I set up?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I have no idea. And I would over hunt those properties.
So it's kind of trial buyer situation.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Like tons of mistakes, but fortunately not a bunch of like wounded deer or something. Just like, I just wasn't getting shot opportunities. Cause I killed a couple good bucks.
Yeah. You killed a really, really nice one with a rifle.
Yeah. But those were
a little more, would you say they were like a little bit more chance or a little bit more luck per se?
So my first buck was on a permission piece, mm-hmm. and I set up the stand the night before.
I think I come and help you drag that.
Yeah. We found 20 bucks. Remember?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And I hand you a $20 bill.
Yeah, dude. That was so, I forgot. Oh my gosh, man. Dude, that's crazy.
But see, like, I was actually making good decisions. I just didn't know it because I had him on camera. He had moved into that area. He was bedding in there, and I moved the stand into an area like right by his bed. And so I didn't know. I don't want to give myself too much credit, but I was like,
you're doing the right thing.
I was doing the right thing. I just didn't know.
You didn't even know you were doing it.
I didn't. Yeah, really comprehend.
Like fully comprehend it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when I killed that good buck the next year, well, the day before that, I messed up on like a probably 140 class deer with my bow, because he came in, hit a scrape, and I had no idea how to like draw.
Dude, that's the hardest part.
Meaning like draw without being seen. Because I was like, I hadn't killed a deer yet with my bow.
Oh my gosh, man.
And so I just like completely messed it up. This dude was not paying attention. Like nowadays, he is
looking back now. You're probably like, oh my gosh, what was I doing?
But the next morning, November 12th, like ended up killing like a 140 class 8-pointer, which was like, he had these curly,
buck was so curled sick.
Brow tines. That was just an amazing experience.
The one brow tine hang, they go up and then split out towards the main beams.
Yeah.
Yeah, that buck was sick.
And that was just hunting a stand that's been there forever.
Right.
Right. And that was like...
In the rut.
Yeah. Oh, it was November 12th, like crazy. First day of gun season. The first year you could use a rifle.
Yeah.
So I had my 308.
Yeah.
But I still hadn't killed a deer with my bow. And so it wasn't until that...
And how many years was that in?
It wasn't until 20... I think 17, maybe.
So like 3 years.
Yeah. So I guess it took me till my third season.
Wow.
It was finally like in October, and it was 2017. A doe came in, was staying there at 12 yards, and I smoked her, and that was my first bow kill. And it was like,
that's awesome.
Finally.
So what was the feeling? I'm sure it was for me a totally different feeling. Compared to a gun?
Yeah, I had a different philosophy back then. I was, some people value a bow kill more than a gun kill, and that's where I'm at nowadays.
But
back then, I was in a mindset of like, I just want to kill deer.
Like elongating your season.
I just wanted to
kill. You want more opportunities. That's why you're bow hunting, right?
I was like, I was of the mindset, like, word. If you gave me a choice between a gun and a bow,
whatever one's going to give you the best chance to shoot a deer.
Yeah. Nowadays I'm bow only.
Yeah. I get it. So I totally get it.
You were trying to build your, just build up those kills, essentially.
Yeah.
Building the foundation, which would bring you to where you are now, obviously. Mm-hmm. But at the time, you're just kind of laying the groundwork for a career of hunting.
Yeah, I just need to kill stuff.
Yeah. You're just hunting deer too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Right? You're not specifically targeting any bucks, well, really.
Yeah, so I, you know, a mistake I made back then was that buck I killed, you know, it was the second buck I killed ever.
Right.
First one was pretty decent too. It was like 110 inches.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember. It was not what I was expecting when I walked up to that deer. I remember driving down the road in my mind, I'm like, a classic Midwest, like, 6-point was, like, in my mind, you know what I mean? And, like, walk up, and granted, like, 110 inches is not a 200, but for a first rack deer, like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
I would have been jacked to shoot that, and I'm sure you would have been just as jacked to kill a 6-point or whatever.
Well, my buddies, I passed up on some, like, littler bucks during bow season,
per se, like a year and a half.
And it was because, and I should have, like, in hindsight, I would tell any new hunter, like, no, kill that buck,
right?
You need kills under your belt.
Nice.
But back then I was like, oh, my buddies are killing big deer, I need to kill big deer.
And you wanted to wait.
And a couple of my buddies, well, just one of my buddies was saying, like, hey, you killed a big deer last year, you should try to kill something bigger. And lo and behold, you have to hunt in places with big deer to kill big deer.
Of course. So, contrary to popular belief, the main thing is you got to hunt where the big ones are.
Yeah, so I didn't fully understand that yet. And so I did pass some smaller ones with a
interesting
bow. And in hindsight, it probably hurt me down the road. Because, like, in 2017, I messed up a bunch of opportunities. No wounded deer, but I got a new permission piece that hadn't been hunted in a while.
Yeah.
And there were multiple, like, nice bucks on that property. And nowadays, I would have been tagged out, you know, pretty early.
So you feel like you maybe missed the experience that you could have had shooting the smaller deer.
Yes.
Learning and then just starting to climb the ladder.
Yeah.
With more mature, smarter deer.
Yep. Yep. And it was because I was listening to people tell me, no, you should hold out for a big buck.
Of course.
And I was only hunting one state back then.
Yeah.
So you could hold out.
That makes a lot of sense.
It made more sense to me.
Yeah.
And my mindset back then was, well, once gun season comes, you know, I'll probably get something.
Like, probably going to go, you know, kill a 140 in a field. And
yeah.
I remember that deer too, walking up, was like, oh my gosh, this is a giant, dude. That deer was awesome. So you killed a doe with your bow. Did you kill any more deer that year with your bow?
I think so. Yeah. I can't remember. No, I think I killed one doe 27 or 17.
Yeah.
One doe 18. First bow buck 18.
Nice.
And then 19 was when things, like, everything changed.
All of a sudden, it's like, what do they say? Like, our minds aren't mature till you're like 25 or something. That was your like, deer hunting moment of, like,
So keep in mind, like, I'd been a student basically this whole time, just like consuming podcast. I was buying books,
reading podcasts,
watching, like,
Dan every YouTube video.
I don't know if I got into Dan Infault stuff yet. It was, like, right around that time, like, Hunting Public.
Everything's exploding.
This is just before they got big. Like,
yeah, that's a cool time to be getting into. I mean, things changed a lot.
Yeah.
So, right then.
So 2019, I bought a brand new bow and I got into archery.
Yeah.
I did, like, John Dudley School Knock, teaches you how to shoot.
Yeah.
So automatically, like, I'm upgrading my archery gear. Start saddle hunting. So I had become a mobile hunter.
Yeah.
And then I was listening to a lot of stuff, starting to realize, like, hey, I need to figure out how to mobile hunt and hunt the fresh sign, hunt where they're at now, not where I hope they'll be or where they were historically.
So now you're going, oh, dude, that's so cool. So you went basically novice to, like, all right, now we're going to get serious.
Yeah, so 19 is when I...
Did you create, with your archery stuff, did like a shot process change? Like, was there anything? So basically, you're starting, I'm going to be a serious bow hunter now. Yes. Like, I got to figure this out.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I'm going
to... No more chance stuff. Like, now it's like, you're not taking control of the situation, but you're going to start trying... Your goal is to put yourself into the highest possibility of killing possible. Are you starting to aim more towards targeting bigger deer at that time, or were you still hunting kind of deer?
Indiana, because I had some good private property opportunities. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Like, I had like a class of deer I wanted to shoot. Yeah. Nothing crazy, just, you know, like good sized deer. And then,
like maybe Pope and Young ish.
Yeah. Pope and Young ish. And then, but I'll say what all changed for me is on November 12th. You'll see a theme here. I've killed.
Yeah. I was going to say
on November 12th.
There's two right there.
We had it was like right before gun season started, a cold front came in and it snowed. Mm. And it was like
low pressure.
Yeah. It was snow. This cold, like, you know, 15, 20 mile per hour northwest wind day.
Oh yeah.
Like, I was freezing.
Like, winter's blowing in.
Yeah. So what happened was I set up in a rut funnel, which I've had, you know, seen many deer in before. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I almost had a shot at like a pretty decent one. He was on a doe. Well, I was pretty cold. Like, it was, that day was cold.
Yeah.
And so I went back to my car, and as I'm walking back to my car, there's like three does and a decent buck.
Oh, man.
I'm like, oh, are you kidding
me? Yeah.
They are standing right by my car. And I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. And so.
And this is on private or?
Private.
Okay.
And it was like an all day rut hut.
Yeah.
And and so what I did was I just, you know, ate lunch, warmed up a bit, and then I followed their tracks.
Nice.
And so where I followed their tracks to was like, it was, you know, this place is like classic farm country.
Yeah.
There's like woods in the middle of a field, and there's like a little creek.
Yeah.
Well, it went down to the creek, across the creek, and it was this little bend in the creek where I had just randomly put a camera. And I checked the camera, and I'm like, oh my gosh,
Is that right where that little, there's like a little thicket of saplings in there? Right in the bend in that creek?
Kind of.
And there's a huge giant oak tree right there?
I don't know if you've been there.
I don't know. I can't remember. Anyways,
you haven't been to this place.
Okay.
And so, but anyways, it's the bend of a creek.
Okay.
Following. And so basically what they were doing is there's thick stuff above it.
Okay.
A little bit of a hill.
Yeah. A little bit of terrain.
They're bedding up there, and the way the wind was blowing, bucks were cruising the creek and wind checking the beds.
Makes sense.
And so I saw multiple mature bucks that were there that morning, and I saw where the tracks were.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I set up in a cedar tree in my saddle. Okay. And I'd say not even 45 minutes into the sit, this is like 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah.
A buck comes in cruising that same lane that all these bucks were cruising. Right. And he catches my ground scent, which was like, you know, in hindsight, kind of dumb how I walked in, but you know, I'm learning how to mobile hunt.
Right.
And so he jumps back, because he's like, what was that? And and he stops, he's 23 yards, and I have to take like kind of a quartering two type shot, like broadside quartering two, and I have to thread it between like two branches. And I did, and it was a weak side shot, so I did the
flip, this, okay,
or the spin.
So you put the tether over your right shoulder, your right-handed shooter over your right shoulder, came underneath, and now you're shooting on you're standing belly away from the tree, shooting on your left side.
Yeah. So okay. I follow. You know, sell the pin, aim for 23 yards and smoked him.
Nice.
Like, and it was snow, so like I could easily trail him.
Dude.
He died about 70 yards away, and I was like, this is the day I became a mobile hunter.
That was like your first, would you say, like, intentional kill? Like, you were...
That was the first time I felt like I put the pieces together,
yeah,
and not just hunted like a spot, yeah, that I thought was good for.
Because you followed those deer in there, saw the and set up below doe bedding. Yep. Based off the knowledge you picked up in the exact moment that's happening right then.
Yeah.
And then you killed a deer right then.
Yep.
Yeah, that's like the mobile hunting dream, pretty much. Yeah. I've never experienced that. I'm sure there was a lot of satisfaction that came along.
Oh yeah,
with that kill.
I was pretty happy. And I was awesome. Like, that was, I mean, that, you know, at that point in time, I'd been out west a couple times, mm-hmm, like a couple of mule deer hunts.
Yeah.
2018, when I tagged out, I actually started going to Kentucky hunting public land, mm-hmm, and just, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. Yeah. I would just,
you're just out there. Just,
I would just grind it out.
Yeah. And
2019 was like a full public land season for me.
Nice.
And that was like me in 2018, I was carrying around a climber on public.
Oh my gosh, bro.
2019, I was carrying around my saddle gear way better.
And yeah. Then,
but I wasn't able to like kill anything.
Yeah.
I was getting on deer, but.
Were you mostly like spot picking on, you know, say Onyx or something along those lines? Or
yeah.
were you scouting prior or like anything, you know, prior to the season or anything like that, trying to get on deer and then hunting that? Or what did that look like?
18, I think I watched a hunting public video on Amazon Prime. Like, I think before they were like big on YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, oh, that looks cool. I was like, where's their public land at? So I just, you know, started looking on a map.
Yeah.
And found some land in Kentucky. Talked to a guy that owned an archery shop. He told me to go on one piece. And
yeah,
lo and behold, it was terrible hunting. But it was.
Oh my gosh, and
ended up finding another piece I liked a lot
more. A lot more than that one.
And,
thank goodness.
That's, yeah, awesome. So it was, you know, 2018.
What do you think, what piqued your interest with public? Was it just the fact that it was another state and there was yeah, more opportunity to, so now you have another tag? Or was it, I really want to hunt public for like the challenge?
It was a couple things. One was I didn't have permission anywhere in Kentucky. So
yeah,
part of it was just like, I need somewhere to hunt.
Yeah.
And the hunting public guys were like starting to make it look like, oh, you can,
yeah, it's apparent that you can have success.
Yeah.
Okay.
Whereas a lot of my like classic knowledge was, oh, public sucks, don't hunt it.
100%.
And then it was, oh no, you just have to like outwork everybody.
Yeah.
I was like, if I can outwork people, I have a chance, because I will.
Yeah, I can play that game.
And so the first year was like lots of trial and error. I would talk to people. Same with like fishing. I always talk to everybody.
Yeah.
Like, I was big into fly fishing and
yeah,
know, still
yeah,
am,
yeah,
but
yeah,
don't spend as much time trying to learn it like,
sure,
I used to.
Yeah.
And I would always talk to fly fishermen. Well, I would run into people in public who looked like they knew what they were doing. Those were the guys I'd talk to.
Yeah.
I'd say like, and I would just tell them, I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. So they would end up giving me advice and stuff.
Picking up some knowledge crumbs, you
yeah,
know, whatever they would give to you, and take that and then build it on it. And
yeah, and I think around that time I discovered, you know, Dan Infault's methods and
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. And
beast mode, baby.
Yeah, and that's it, yeah, 2018 I really didn't know what I was doing, but I would just go grind. And
yeah,
then 2019 I actually started like learning more about like, well, here's how you use your map, here's how you should navigate the terrain.
Yeah, yeah,
here
yeah,
are
yeah,
like I bought a book called Mapping Whitetails,
mm-hmm,
where it tells you in hill country, like, here's travel routes that deer typically take.
Yeah.
Like, here are funnel points. Like,
yeah,
here's what it looks like when you're doing that. And so that's when I started learning what is a saddle, not
okay,
saddle hunting saddle.
Like, no, no, yeah, terrain saddle. Yeah.
And stuff like that. So I was starting to see more deer, but
yeah,
the public land deer are so paranoid that
yeah,
I had the hardest time.
And the area you were hunting was pretty heavily pressured.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Like I put a camera on what I thought was a buck bed, and in hindsight, yeah, it was probably a buck bed.
Mm-hmm.
Someone took it. And I was like, it was so far back there too. I was like, holy smokes.
Like, really?
So there are,
dude, people go to all ends of the earth yeah. on public. Like, it has always blown my mind. You'll be so far back in there and you're like, dude, I don't think a soul has been here in 20 years. And then you'll look over your shoulder and there's a 12-foot ladder stand. You're like, how did somebody get this thing in here? And why is this here? Like, what, are you kidding me? I thought I had this to myself. It's amazing, man. So at that time, you were just trying to go deep. And
I was trying a lot. I had
just put in, like, you just thought, okay, if I put more effort in, I'm going to have more success. So you weren't really like, you know, trying to outsmart people quite yet. It was just a little outworking them.
Not yet. It was just more or less the classic is either got to go deep or you got to go to the overlook spots.
Of course.
And I was trying both. And I was finding like buck tracks. I was finding, you know, rubs.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to put it all together. Like, I was finding puzzle pieces. I had no clue how you put a puzzle
together. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's what I did not understand. I knew what, like, buck beds are. Mm-hmm. I just was like, well, what I really didn't understand was, like, thermals.
Ah.
Really didn't understand that. I did not understand, like, if you're hunting a bottom where all the sign is, the wind probably sucks.
So there's like, a reason the deer are there. You know?
Yeah, there's like very specific times in wind situations that you can actually go hunt a bottom.
I
like,
see. I see.
Those were the kind of things I had no clue.
Right.
And I was yet to learn.
Right. Yeah. No, that makes sense. I think, I hunted a lot of public in Texas and was extremely, extremely pressured and went through a similar phase of, I'm just going to walk. Like, I remember walking like 16 miles in a day trying to, you know, just like, I'm just going to do anything and everything and push. And then started to learn, oh, if I hunt, I would find more sign within 100 yards of the road. And like, why am I walking a mile and a half? And like you said, you start picking up on trying to outsmart the deer and the people.
Yeah.
You know, you're hunting kind of both. And you got to be able to work around that to create a strategy. And so you were picking up, learning what a saddle is, learning what a buck bed is, all these things. When did it start to click? Like, when did you start putting some puzzle pieces together, maybe getting on some deer?
It wasn't until about 22.
Really? So you put in 2 or 3 years of just grinding on public, pretty much just being a student of the deer and whoever would share knowledge with you.
Yeah. No, I mean, 2020, I got a decent velvet buck on opening day.
Yeah. And it's freaking awesome.
You know, posted on the Hunting Beast and was like tagging Dan Infall. A bunch of people were commenting
on it. So sick.
And Dan's like, congratulations. I was like, oh, dude, that's so cool. Yeah. Like, reality, like the reason that worked was I went to an area that I had scouted the crap out of, hunted, and I was just in a good spot.
Yeah.
And it just so happened that buck walked by, right? Okay. But I won't give myself too much credit on that one. Yeah. Now, I started hunting like a bigger piece of property that I had to drive pretty far to get to in Indiana.
Yeah.
And I knew there was probably big bucks there just by the size of the property.
Okay.
And so that one, in 21, I spent some time there, especially during a COVID year. You could get out more often.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. But everybody else was too. So the pressure was up.
Man. I was running the guys from Michigan, and
for
some reason, Michigan guys will come down a lot.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
You know, so people were trying the same things. I'd say 21 was the year I got like the most random pictures of people going deep for sure. And like guys were really trying to do the things they're seeing.
I think
the hunting public was huge back then.
Of course. I was going to say, I feel like that was the peak of
it was. Like,
not even just the hunting public. There's also like, there's a myriad of YouTube groups.
Oh, it was
that are exploding at this time that are showing, look at all this land we have that, you know, we are very blessed in the United States to be able to hunt on. Yeah. But it was before that, I feel like you said, like I didn't hear of anybody hunting public land in the early 2000s, growing up in the hunting industry, watching so many different films and all these hunters, like you never, it was, if somebody hunted public, you're like, oh, dude, like I'm sorry, like, you couldn't have found anywhere to hunt. Yeah. Like that's it. That's what you got. You know, like there's these things in your mind. You're like, what in the world? Which, looking back now, the guys that we all look up to in the hunting, that hunt public and are putting that knowledge out, that was like the Mecca.
Yeah.
They were killing giant deer and a lot of deer in that late 90s, early 2000s. Like,
oh yeah, there was a bunch of guys that were way, like, no one knew
way ahead of the game.
Yeah, they're, yeah. They're way ahead of the game, or, you know, they just, I don't know. I mean, Dan Infault's one of them. I've mentioned absolutely his name a bunch of times, but,
absolutely.
So that year, 21,
okay, 21,
hunt this piece, and I found this like giant scrape on top of a ridge. Okay.
Classic.
Put a cell cam on it and was getting like good bucks coming by. Nice. And there was one time I was at a conference mid-October, a giant walked in and I was like, oh my gosh, why am I at this conference?
Why?
One of my buddies was like, dude, just fly home.
Yeah. Like, true, I'm on my way.
Yeah. And
oh my gosh, dude.
So I'd be getting good bucks on this scrape.
Yeah.
Right? Even daylight. And every time I hunted it, nothing.
Really?
Nothing.
What time of year were you getting these consistent deer on camera?
It was definitely October.
Like late?
Like mid. Well, they started mid.
Oh my gosh.
Mid-October to,
yeah,
to late October. They were like really hitting the scrape.
That's awesome.
And
it's like heavy pre-rut, like pre-rut, and yeah, then into heavy pre-rut. Yeah.
So there was one time I was driving there and I get a picture of like this nice 12 pointer walking by. And I was like, dang it, I should have hunted in the morning. And
on public. Yeah.
Yeah. And so here's what ends up happening is what I ended up figuring out was there was one night I was hunting that scrape. And I hear a deer blow below me.
Mm-hmm.
And it finally clicked. They are scenting that area before they walk into it.
Like J hooking in almost type of thing?
Yes.
To the scrape?
Because there's hunting pressure on top of the ridge.
Mm.
It's too easy to walk on top of the ridge. This place is tough to navigate. There's like thickets that you run into and you're like, holy smokes, I'm stuck.
Yeah.
Like I literally have to map how to walk into
that
place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And which I knew that's like part of the recipe of finding a decent spot.
Yeah, is, yeah, yeah.
And it's just not near cities.
Right,
so,
right.
Anyways, so I do this. I end up hunting that season and just kind of say like, all right, you know, game over for that area.
Yes, yeah.
You know, I'll be back at it next year. So what I did was I scouted there in the off season, and I found a trail that I saw a buck take.
Mm-hmm.
He was like doing kind of a clover leaf move.
Okay.
You know, looking for does.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
And so I'm like, all right, I need to go down there.
Okay.
And so I did. And so I marked a pin. I was like, this is a good spot. Here's an ambush spot. Okay. Fast forward to October 22.
Yes.
And I go in there. It's like early October. I had a camera on that same scrape. Okay. I planned on setting up a camera on that same scrape.
Okay.
I go to that scrape. There's two cell cams on it.
I remember you texting me, dude. I text you. I was like, how's season going? What's it looking like? You're like, bro, I literally put this camera up and there's two other cameras on the same scrape.
That's right. I came in early. Yeah, I came in that summer, put a camera. I put it on the wrong spot.
Yeah,
I missed the scrape because everything was grown up. I couldn't tell. Yeah,
no, I get it.
And then I on the actual scrape were two cameras. So,
bro,
and
not even like pointing different angles, just like double up just in case.
Yeah,
that's amazing.
Something or it was two guys who just were like, yeah, whatever.
Can you imagine a deer walk up there and you're like, bro, it's the paparazzi here? No, it's just all these guys are putting their on a scrape, dude.
So in that holy moment, smokes. In that moment where I see the double scrape, the triple scrape,
triple camera scrape.
Oh my gosh. Right, well, here's the deal. These deer are getting pressure on the ridgetop
because
it's easy for hunters to walk on the ridgetop. Everything else sucks to walk through.
Right.
I'm going to go to that spot I scouted below.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I did. And so I go to that spot I scouted. This is like October 7th. And I'm it's like, I don't know, if the sun went down at 7:30, right, it's like 5:30.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And this nice 10-pointer starts walking in.
Whoa.
And I'm like, what's he doing here? It's 5:30 p.m. It's hot.
It's early October.
It's early October.
What is he doing up?
Why is he here? And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to ask too many questions. Yeah. Right? So he comes in, takes the trail lower than what I thought,
mm-hmm,
and comes up. He's like, he's either hitting a scrape or like feeding on something. I can't really see his head.
I got you.
And I have to like lean back, yeah, take a 32-yard shot.
Yeah.
And so it was like the, I'm in the saddle, I'm, yeah, leaning back. It's, yeah, yeah. And so anyways, yeah, yeah, I take the shot, make it, I aimed a little too far back cause I literally couldn't see his shoulder.
I see.
It's a liver hit. But he ends up dying like in 45 minutes or something. And,
oh man.
And so I'm like, holy smokes. You know, I go, it's a hour walk back to my car.
Oh my gosh, dude.
So I go drop off all my stuff. I don't know if he's dead for sure, but I heard a crash.
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's dead.
Pretty sure he's dead.
The arrow had gone 100 yards past where I shot him. So like it went right through him.
Zipped him.
Zipped him.
Holy crap. Yards.
And then.
Did you find it?
The arrow? Yeah.
Because
the 100 yards. Light and knock.
Holy crap. Dude.
And so.
Oh my gosh. It's like a tracer going. That's crazy. Oh, dude,
it was insane.
That's so cool.
It was like the angle of the hill just. Let it happen.
And, that's awesome. I don't think a lot of people could say they found their arrow 100 yards after passing through.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. It was pretty insane. And that then, insane. So anyways, I end up, you know, going where like basically I heard him crash and he's right there.
Dead.
And
gosh, that's awesome.
I was like, holy smokes. Like I did something.
Yeah.
Like that was like where.
You made a move based off the pressure. Also off of reading the deer sign, mm-hmm, when you went back and saw like that buck doing the clover pattern. So you went to where the deer was and then set up and hunted that. And this is a whole year later.
Yeah.
So it took step after step, piecing that knowledge together to then finally bring it all to fruition and kill a nice buck.
Uh-huh.
Dude. So that's awesome. You've gone from shooting a deer with his old slug smooth barrel gun to that's 7 years?
It was like my 8th year of bow hunting.
Dude.
Yeah.
That's pretty fast.
Yeah.
To be honest, that's a pretty, you went through a crash course, obviously, some hard knocks, but that's incredible. I'm yet to experience that. Especially on public. This year was the first year I've actually like maybe started to do, or I'm not aimlessly like hunting deer, like trying to shoot a buck, not a specific buck by any means, but
yeah, just a class.
Yeah. Like I'm trying to target a bigger deer, like making game plans and things like that. And then trying to put that, like actually trying to make that happen. But so that was 21.
That was 22.
22, and then was 22 the magic year? Was it?
Yeah.
22's, the trifecta.
22 is when I got 3 bucks in 3 states. Yes. Indiana, Kentucky, Ohio.
Couple public and private. Combo of all, you know, both.
Yeah.
Dude, that's so awesome. And you killed that one. I love the Ohio story. You're hunting a really, really big piece of public. And at that point, you had quite a bit of knowledge. So when you went into that hunt, was there anything specific? I mean, it's hill country area, huge giant, very, very large piece of public. But when you were going into that hunt, did you have like areas picked out that you'd been scouting before? Or were you going in with any experience on that place?
Yeah, so this one was in 2023. So, you know, I had a really good year in 22.
Yeah, yeah.
Honestly, didn't hunt a lot that year because I was very fortunate. Like in September, I killed a buck in Kentucky in velvet. And then Indiana, that buck I described in Indiana, mm-hmm, I mean, that was October 7th. And then.
Yeah, that's early, dude.
I called our Uncle Tom and
asked if I
could go hunt in his place. And
I
was fortunate there too. And
well, that was, I do want to mention there was a pretty big play you made on that Ohio. Our family's permission that they gave to you to hunt, and you made a move based off of, again, pressure. It sounds simple, but like you're not making that move years prior.
Yeah. So they hunt the same stands over and over again.
Yeah.
And so as he's telling me what's what on his property, and you know, keep in mind he's got decades of knowledge.
Of course.
And he's a good hunter.
Yeah. He's killed some nice deer.
Yeah, he's killed some real nice deer. And all I did was I was like, all right, I guarantee they know there's a stand there.
Of course.
So I'm gonna hunt just off of that stand where I see the sign.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that next morning I got a nothing huge or anything, but like just
no,
I got
you shot a nice deer, morning. But yeah. Without that experience from the hunting the public land,
no, never would have.
You would never made that play.
No, never.
Which is so interesting because it's like a crossover between the two. Like you're hunting a piece of private, but using public land tactics. I think that's really cool. So, kill the trifecta. 23. You're going to hunt big piece in Ohio.
Yeah. So I tagged out in Indiana, Kentucky. I never got one. I was hunting a new piece and had many good encounters, but like it just didn't happen.
Kind of back to learning again a little bit.
I mean, it just sometimes
just didn't happen. Yeah, dude. Trust me.
I was on them.
Yeah, just didn't happen.
Yeah, I had them on camera. There was days where if I could have got out of work earlier, I probably would have got one.
And what you gonna
do? Stuff like that happened.
Yeah, yeah, you got to pay the bills, man.
It's past COVID years, so
yeah.
But you know, 23, my buddy Kurt, who I mentioned earlier, we both decided to go to Ohio. So like the big public pieces in Ohio. And, he was doing more map scouting than me, I'll be honest. Cause I'm so used to doing map scouting. I was kind of like Kurt, you always hunt these big private pieces. Like you go for it, buddy. Like,
I got you.
Kind of my attitude on that one. But he narrowed it down and I was like, all right, where are we going? So he sent me, you know, the area. I was like, sweet. So I looked a little bit, but basically what I did was I did a lot less map scouting on that one, a lot more, hey, I just want to see what the,
like in the moment scouting.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Dude.
And,
like true, like mobile, like you're hunting them now as the deer are, you're picking up, reading sign, and then hunting.
Yeah. So when we, that was, you know, these are prime dates again. Like I think we got there on November 10th, hunting November 11th. But Kurt map scouted this one point where like all the ridges come together and you know, it was kind of like, Kurt, you're kind of taking like the best spot, but that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah. I was like, he's sitting on the third baseline. Yeah. You're up in,
I was like,
in the second or third level.
Fine. It's fine, Kurt. I scouted all the way up to that point. can confirm that all the deer signs point there, but
you looked at you and he was like, yeah, bro.
But you found it on the map.
He's like, so anyways, you can go sit over there.
It's fine. It's fine. But anyway, so yeah, I didn't care. I honestly wasn't worried about it.
Yeah,
I was just glad he was hunting on public.
Yeah, no, it's cool.
And so it's just kind of cool to finally hunt with another person on public land because I'm usually by myself.
Yeah.
And
somebody that's obviously putting in time and effort.
Oh, dude, he's
matching what you're doing.
Dude, he's a good hunter.
Yeah.
I'm always like, I'm all ears when he's talking about strategy.
Yeah,
but
dude.
Anyway, so, you know, what I ended up deciding to do was go to a different saddle. You know, I found all the sign. All the sign was pointing to where Kurt won the hunt. It's like, Kurt, you go for it. I'm going to go over here that next day.
Yeah.
So I made a plan to go to a new spot, and it's November 12th. So the spot I was supposed to go to, I see a headlamp.
Oh.
Yeah. So somebody's like there or close to it.
Where you're wanting to go.
Either way, I'm like, okay, I gotta go.
Gotta pivot.
Gotta pivot.
Yep.
So what I did was on the spot, I was like, well, you know, where I set up the day before, I could see where the deer were going.
Yeah.
Cause you know, I had found like basically, cause there's all these scrapes, all these rubs. And I was like, all right, well they're doing this.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I went to where I saw them go, if that makes sense.
Yep.
And what's interesting is like, you know, in public, I'm usually trying to get and thicker stuff because they don't like to walk out in the open.
In the open.
But in this case, this was pretty open. And I was like questioning myself the whole time.
Because it's different than what you're used to.
It's just too open.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're not going to
There's walk. No way.
I was like, but this is where they were yesterday. So I'm like having this internal debate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and I'm like,
I think everybody's been there. We're like, dude, I think this is what I should do. My gut's telling me this is what I should do. But maybe my historical experience is telling me I need to do something else.
Right. Yeah. And that's, but what it ends up happening is I was honestly about to get down. I was like, I should go over there because it looked thicker. And
yeah.
Like I was about to get down. Then a buck goes by. I was like, oh, okay. Well, good thing I didn't get down. And so a buck goes by. I'm like, all right. And then chasing, right? So then there's like,
oh man,
two bucks chasing a doe and
rut fest.
Yeah. Just like rut action is happening. And the doe walks right by me.
Oh,
like,
buddy.
Like 10 yards. And I'm like, oh yeah. And so
thank you.
Not only did she do that, she even stopped in the right spot.
Oh, dude.
And because the nice buck, the nicer of the two bucks, he comes up, stops literally on like an old logging trail and just like quartering away. I think it was like probably 13 yards.
Oh my gosh.
And
I just dude.
Was like, thank you, Lord Jesus. Yes.
So, oh my gosh, that's awesome.
So dude. I smoked him, and then what was really cool is he stopped and I saw him fall.
Oh, dude.
Yeah.
There's no better feeling when you watch them. I don't know what it is, because like if they fall out of sight, there's still something in the back of your mind. It's like that deer could just be gone out of my life. But yeah. When you watch them fall in the moment right there, that's when I just completely like lose my marbles. In the tree, and you're like shaking, the whole tree is shaking, like typewriter legged whole thing, oh, you know, yeah. Like, oh my gosh, dude, that's incredible. So that was your 23 season killed in Ohio.
Yeah. I got one on Indiana Public too.
And you killed, so not a trifecta here, but kill one on Indiana Public. Oh yeah. My gosh, dude. So that leads us up to this following season.
Uh-huh.
So now you're going into year, what, 9, 10?
This was my 10th bow season.
Oh my gosh, dude. A decade of bow hunting.
Yeah.
That's that flew by. Oh my gosh. That's crazy. So how did this past season go? I mean, well, we're kind of still in it a little bit, but
you and I went to Kentucky.
Yeah, dude. Oh my gosh. It was fun. We had a good time. You told me, I swore to myself, I will not hunt the opening day.
Oh, dude. It was.
And then all of a sudden it's like,
fellers,
you know, everywhere. July, and we're like, bro, we should go hunt Kentucky on the opener.
Yeah, we're like, it won't be that bad.
It'll be fine. It won't be like warm or actually, it was a pretty, the weather.
We got
was,
a cold front.
Yeah, the weather was awesome.
Yeah, but we found a sweet spot to set up.
Dude, we found a hot acorn tree and there's like significant deer sign. We're like, this is juice.
If that young man hadn't, that kind young man hadn't walked right under us,
bro,
and proceeded to walk through the beans.
Oh my gosh, dude.
Oh my gosh.
There was so much sign. We found a ton of sign. And like that public we were hunting, there was quite a
bit. That was like our one shot. Because that was before the pressure.
Yes.
That morning was our one shot.
And there was beans planted on this public and like,
oh, they were
the sign was, we bumped a deer scouting. We saw so much sign, like, dude, it was looking really juiced. Yep. And we were set up in this little wood lot and it's like, all right, it's about to be like, it's time, the deer are gonna start popping out, like this is about to be sick. Opening morning, all the dreams are gonna come true. Here comes a dude through the middle of the beans and walks right to the base of your tree, dude.
Oh yeah.
Whoever you are out there, like, we do love you, but also, bro, please stop walking in the middle of the beans on the opener at daylight. Yeah, oh, my gosh, bro.
You whistle at him, then he comes to me. I whistle at him. I'm like, dude, quit. You turn around.
Oh, gosh.
Turn around and go away.
You think it wouldn't happen, but it
zero does. Gear on him, just a bow.
Bro, he was living in the moment.
Yeah.
Crown and pounding.
Yeah.
Opener.
It's going to pull it.
So that was a good start to the season. We did see some deer. I saw a couple does.
Yeah, I did do.
We didn't even see one buck that whole time. We jumped one in scouting.
Yeah.
But we left. Dude, that was so interesting because...
The morning we left, I had does walk by, but
yeah, we saw some does, but like when we were scouting out there, we kept finding all the sign and it was all around the beans. I mean, it was very 100%. Like all the sign was around the beans.
Zero in the hills.
And we pushed off because we're like, okay, maybe they're going to be bedding.
1,000 hunters drove by glass in the beans.
That one night, I think there we were looking over probably, how big you think that field was? Maybe like 70 acres, 80 acres, give or take.
I remember...
Maybe not that. Maybe not even that, but that one was probably maybe 30 acres. And there was like six of us in six trucks looking with our binos out at the same field.
I know. And I remember one time I went into the spot, like I had the sneakiest way into it.
Yeah. Yeah, you did, dude.
And saw a fawn.
And she's lucky. If it was like 2 or 3 days of that, you know what I mean? Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. But we found a bunch of time. Oh, it was fun. Started out the season.
I got 10,000 chigger bites.
Bro, the chiggers, the ticks, it was...
Yeah.
The camaraderie was great.
Great camaraderie.
Times were good. Vibes were high.
The Sitka bros were right Sick, there.
The Sitka bros. Everybody was there. We were also there. But then the next day, there was like nobody. Yeah. Which was super interesting.
Remember the local crossbow hunter going in on the Michigan guy's spot?
Bro. That guy, yes. Oh, man. So we had a good, I didn't hunt Kentucky after that.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay.
I never got back out to Kentucky. I never got back out there. So that was my whole Kentucky
season. Well, anyway, so for me,
after the amazing kickstart to our 2024 season.
Yeah, I didn't go too hard in Kentucky in September because mm-hmm. I was going to Nebraska mule deer hunting with your brother Mitch.
Yeah.
And
had good success out there. That was an awesome trip.
Dude, killed a
freaking pretty jammer mule deer. Both of y'all killed jammer mule deer.
Oh, that was unreal.
And both of y'all in that moment were cooler and stronger.
Big time.
Anybody. Oh, dude, yeah. That's so funny.
So killed a really nice mule deer on a mm-hmm. really cool spot in stock. So killed him on day two. Mitch followed up on day three, killing like, honestly, they're the two biggest deer we saw. So
that's insane.
And that was cool. Very cool. And then back in Indiana, I had this like really nice overlook piece the year before mm-hmm. where I killed a pretty nice buck
on public.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And turns out other people found it.
And
I was like, all right, well,
it was good.
I was hoping for years to come that would just be like this,
the honey hole.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Other people found it. So I started hunting a spot where I had to go, at least a mile and a half in.
Mm.
And I was on some deer.
Yeah.
And it just never happened.
Didn't happen.
But I'd say 80% of the time I went in there, I saw a mature buck.
Sheesh.
Yeah.
Just couldn't seal the deal.
It just never walked by when I was needed them. Like there was times where they ran by after dark. There were like,
oh my gosh, dude.
There was, I almost hunted one tree and the biggest buck that I had on camera walked by it. Because I went to my second choice spot. And then he actually almost walked in on me as I was setting up.
Oh, my gosh. And
he pegged me as I was setting up.
Bruh.
And
gosh.
So what's interesting is this was actually my best year for whitetails.
Yeah.
But I don't have the results of previous years.
I see what you're saying.
And it was just the ability to, like, go find deer.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would say I had... my season would mirror that. I had more big deer in front of me this year consistently.
Yeah.
And I was on deer consistently, hunting private only, but on more deer than I've ever been around in my whole life. Like I saw more deer this season than every deer or every season combined.
Yeah.
But I did sit almost 80 sits this year.
Oh yeah.
Which is I've never even hunted half that.
Yeah.
So
that's a lot.
Time and effort. Yeah. Almost 80 sits. But
Just imagine if you had a compound bow.
Bro.
Think about this. Think about this. If I did truly, now obviously there, you know, there were a lot of very large bucks. There was two specific very large bucks that would have been within compound range.
Yeah, I bet.
Yes. There was the 8-point that, yeah. Anyways.
But anyways, so I ended up.
That's how she goes.
In Ohio, I was, you know, hunting.
A draw area.
Yeah, a draw area. And yeah. Ended up being fortunate to get the biggest buck on the property, came in. Mm. And I took a frontal shot. Mm. Okay. Now, so there's a lot of debate on this. And of course. Really depends on who you talk to.
Of course.
And keep in mind, I shoot my bow quite a bit.
Yeah.
I'm pretty accurate. I don't black out.
Yeah.
Sometimes that happens. He came in looking for a doe, stopped at 20 yards, figured out something's up.
Yeah.
I don't know if he saw me or smelled me.
But you had a moment of like,
had a split second to make a decision.
Yeah.
Took the frontal. There was blood everywhere. Mm. Dude bled so much. And he ended up living.
Yeah.
The reason I know that, called a tracker.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a dog. We jumped him.
Mm.
So never did get back on him. But, you know, big lesson learned there. I still don't know if I'll ever take a frontal again, I'll be honest.
But you're elevated. People
was elevated. Yes, that makes it more tricky.
Of course.
But, you know, some people have very, you know, it's a very polarizing topic.
Of course,
with bow hunters, but
I would say that I absolutely would not knock anybody who's, you're in that moment, like you put so much time and effort, and like there is a time where you have to make that split decision, and it's a game of inches. Mm-hmm. If you hit that deer an inch a different direction, DRT within 50 yards.
I know.
There's so many things that go into play. Like, also, I mean, they say a deer can duck at like 1,300 feet per second.
I think he moved. I honestly can't say for sure because I don't film. But I don't know. I'm at the point I've killed enough deer. I think something moved. I don't know. But who?
And it doesn't take much.
Either way, that happened.
Yeah.
And I passed up a smaller buck mm-hmm. that I could have shot. Was getting on bucks pretty consistently.
Yeah.
There, get on bucks pretty consistently in Indiana. It just never happened in Indiana. Then I went to Kentucky one day to a spot I had scouted and hunted the previous year and went and killed a buck.
It
was pretty cool because it was like, it was just years of work paid off.
Dude, that's freaking awesome.
All the way back from like hunting in 2018 to like, now I know, hey, these are some good spots. Like, I'm just going to go to a spot I know that's pretty good.
Yeah. Seems like your biggest game has been building on knowledge over time.
Yeah.
Whether that's with private, public, all of it, but building your knowledge on specific areas.
Right.
And also not being too frustrated with maybe not having success right then, but building it for the future of, okay, I might not kill a deer here this year, but maybe next year or maybe 2, 3, 5 years down the road.
Yeah.
Obviously you just said you were scouting an area in 2018, 2019, and then you just killed a deer in 2024 mm-hmm. over that based off of knowledge you built then. So like that is, I think anybody listening, you should be remembering and stacking that knowledge so it could come into play at any moment.
Yeah.
That's incredible. Would you say what would you say is, biggest, when you transitioned from just strictly hunting private, like what was the biggest lesson for you on public, or a myriad of lessons, or what was it that really like you felt turned the corner for you where it was like, okay, now I'm kind of not necessarily killing deer, but like seeing deer or being around them?
Yeah, 22, like I said, I had learned how to find puzzle pieces. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to put them together.
Right.
22, I finally felt like I had put a puzzle together for at least one area.
Yeah. Right. So you figured out just
for example, say you figured out, okay, they're bedding in this area, and now I've figured out they're feeding over here. Okay, here's a travel funnel that they're using between those two,
yep,
set up on the funnel or something along those lines. Like you're picking up multiple pieces in that specific area.
It was like they were using this trail to avoid hunting pressure and wind check hunters.
It seems like a lot of your success has come from, not all of it, obviously, like a lot of your success has come from making plays off of pressure, just a little bit.
Yeah.
You're not moving. You know, you find deer, the pressure comes, you're not moving a quarter mile away and finding all just brand new deer, or a mile away. You're moving like small incremental movements, 60, 80, maybe 200 yards, give or take. Yeah. So you're, I mean, I think a lot of us think we have to, okay, there's pressure. I need to move out of the country.
Yeah.
You know, I need to go hunt a whole new piece or something along those lines. But in reality, your plays were just small, incremental.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's one spot I hunt that it's a smaller public piece.
Mm-hmm.
The spot where I almost killed a decent buck was literally 30 yards from a trail and where a guy had a cell cam.
Bro.
But it was, all I was doing was hunting an oak tree because there were so few oak trees on this property. Area.
Yeah.
So it was like kind of a destination food source and there wasn't ag fields. And so it was, it was just no one hunted right there.
Yeah.
And it's 30 yards from a trail, but
gosh, dude,
for some reason the deer didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah. And it seemed like too, a lot of your success too was finding like where the deer are right then.
Yeah.
Also, you're using historical data over time as well. It seems like you have to have all these tools in your bag and you have to learn each tool, learn the ins and outs of it, stick it in your bag. Now go grab another tool. And then the longer you do it, like your tool bag's just getting bigger and then you're able to make more plays and like use all that collective knowledge over time, which the only way to acquire that is by doing it.
Yeah. You know, messing up thousands of times.
Yeah. Well, they say to become a master, it's like 10,000 hours or 10,000 times you have to do it, you know? That's so cool to see again from in a decade, which I think a lot of, like the day and age we live in is like a quick fix. Mm-hmm. Everybody wants like instant success.
Yeah.
And you went into it knowing you're going to take a little bit of the harder road, but the fruits of that labor are way greater because of that. Instead of like, imagine if you just went in, got lucky and like, you know, you kill like a 140, like first day of hunting public or something like that, it's probably going to look a lot different. Maybe it doesn't hook you quite as much either. Like you're addicted to the challenge of it.
Oh yeah.
As well as, you know, obviously like you get a kill, the meat, everything, but all that makes up the hunting. If it was easy, it probably wouldn't be nearly as addicting. Like
I don't think so.
There's no way. Like if you went out and, you know, shot a deer in a field on opening day with a rifle every year, it may or may not hook you like going and, oh dude, I saw a first deer I've ever seen on public, and then like 10 years down the road, like, dude, I just killed a 130 on public because of all this knowledge that you gained through hard work. Like, it's awesome. Point we're getting at is like the harder road is going to result in it's going to be a better result than per se a quick fix. You also can't learn everything by watching YouTube, you know?
No, but you, oh my
gosh. But you can learn a lot.
I learned so much, and especially like, you know, of course, you know, everyone says this kind of stuff, but I just want to make sure everyone understands. Like, I am not doing things like, you know, Jake Bush is someone I listen to.
Yeah.
That guy's unreal.
Mm-hmm.
Unreal. Like, he's getting giant deer on public land.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's a guy named Andy May.
Yeah, like, dude. Oh, my gosh.
Dude's phenomenal.
Incredible.
But those are the guys I really listen to.
Yeah.
People like them. Yeah, I've mentioned like the Hunting Beast
and, of course,
THB. Like, they, and you don't have to be like super judgmental when you're listening to certain people. Like if you don't agree with approach, like take one piece of what that guy does, take one piece of what that guy does. You don't have to like mimic somebody. You need your own style.
Yeah. You got to customize it to yourself.
Yeah.
And you so, don't want to, it's like, it's kind of in life really. You don't want to be somebody else.
Right.
You're going to be your own type of hunter and you got to kind of find that.
Yeah.
But you can learn from everybody. Like you said, having mentors in hunting, super, super important. Also reading, learning as much as you possibly can from everybody. Not just, I don't think, and you probably pick up different things during different times, like in your hunting career.
Yeah.
Depending on what you're really trying to go after, right? Like if you're going to go hunt private and try to kill one over a decoy, like you're going to go focus on that. Or if you're going to...
Even terrains.
Oh my gosh.
Are you hunting hill country?
Yeah.
Are you hunting ag? Are you hunting hill country ag? Are you like it? That varies too.
Yeah, absolutely, dude. So big question. I texted you the other day. What, at any point, where the most have you experienced God in hunting?
I would say there's really cool things that happen. Like this past September, it was like, you know, just a normal hunt.
Yeah.
It was kind of hot, you know, just worked out where I could go hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And a barred owl flew into a tree right by the creek.
Dude,
I have a crazy camera on my phone. I took like a really good picture of it.
It's awesome.
And I think it's stuff like that where you get these signs and you get to experience God's creation and appreciate it and not be so fixed on a goal as much as like slow down.
Kind of experiencing it, living in the moment.
Yeah. So one of my favorite verses is in Psalms. It's be still and know I'm God.
Mm.
I don't have the exact scripture, but and that was a lesson I learned a long time ago about just like it's important to not always be in a hurry and not be so focused and just like try to listen to what God's trying to tell you
in that moment.
In that moment,
it's silent. I feel like I read my Bible a lot when I'm hunting, and I feel like the words are, it's louder. I can hear God speaking to me way louder. And I don't know if it's just because it's quiet, but when you're in the woods, like it slows you down, like, and you're focused and you're experience the creation. I think that it's the most special time. And then when you are able to make a kill, like we were talking about.
Oh yeah.
That moment.
Yeah. That's the 100%. Like, especially, you know, I wish I hunted with people more often.
Mm-hmm.
It's what ends up happening is like naturally in deer hunting, you have your areas you can go to, you have your schedule. You can only hunt when you can hunt. Like
of course.
It's trying
to mend that is difficult.
Yeah. It's more difficult, but
of course,
you know, like when, you all came to like my first two deer.
Yeah, dude.
That was very important to me. When Mitch got his giant mule deer 2 years ago, I didn't kill a single mule deer on that trip, but dude, that was so cool. Yeah. That was just like, I was so happy for him.
Yeah.
And it could have
been camaraderie together. You're experiencing that together. Like I've shed more tears like in that moment over being overcome by emotion, like with people praying over a deer.
Yeah.
Then every deer I killed as a kid, like dad always made it a point that we pray over that animal.
Yeah.
Thank that animal for giving us life. Thank God for blessing us with that moment and with the animal and the meat that we're acquiring from it and all that good stuff. And I remember that more than actually shooting that deer or the time in the stand before that a lot of times.
Yeah.
Like, especially the long term, like, you know, shooting one at 7 or 8 years old. And like, yeah, it's it, that that phrase, the verse that you stated is Psalm 46:10, just for anybody who's wanting to go and read it. Dude, I think that's a great note to end on. I
I'm so pumped to see where this next season's going to go. Hopefully we get to get in the woods together a little bit again.
We're going to the one spot we found.
Yes. Yeah.
We're not going to talk about. No.
It's super, super, nobody knows.
Yeah, very, very secret.
Super secretive. Yeah, so I would say just kind of recap, like, major takeaways for anybody listening. If you're new into hunting, try to find mentors. Also know that there is no time better than now if you're not into hunting. Like, go find some mentors. There is public land out there to hunt. Like, yeah, it is going to be a long path, but you can start at an older age. Nobody should feel that just because you didn't start hunting at 6 years old like me that they can't end up having success. And like, if you devote the time, you can acquire these things. You know, it doesn't take, honest to goodness, like, it's nothing too special. Like, you're just trying really hard and putting the effort and time in.
Yeah.
And like, you're a per se, like, normal Midwestern working man. Like, you're not financially like super wealthy and rich and have just extreme amounts of time on your hands, like anything's like that. You just are using your time wisely, hunting hard, and learning from those times and then building on it.
Yeah
That's incredible. Awesome, dude. Thank you so much.
Oh yeah, man,
for coming on.
Of course.
And y'all will be hearing more from Zach, I am sure. Thank you for listening. Tune in to our next couple upcoming podcasts. Like, please give us a review, and thanks for listening. We are Blessed to Hunt. See you later.